Okay, Alexander, let's talk about the Trump White House deal in Afghanistan. And the first impression that I got from it is that it looks like the troops may come home, that I think it's an 18 or 19 year war in Afghanistan may be winding down. And I say maybe because once again, I'm just looking at it on the surface. I know you've drilled down into the actual agreement. On the surface, it looks like we may have the beginning of the end to that war. Is that true?
I think that's right, but I would emphasize and underline that word you used, which is may. And I say that may because having actually read this agreement, it's so complicated and so intricately written, and the language in it is so dense that I think that it's an agreement that is open to all sorts of interpretations. But I think you are right. I think this is the beginning of the end of this very long war. Now, two things to say about this agreement. Firstly, it is an agreement between the United States and the Taliban. And by the way, one of the weird things about this agreement is that whenever the Taliban is referred to, it refers the Taliban refers to itself as the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. The United States doesn't accept that. So the agreement says this agreement is between the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, as it refers to itself. The United States does not recognize that expression, but the other word for it is the Taliban. And you find this bizarre phrase repeated again and again and again throughout the agreement, wherever the Taliban is mentioned. That gives you an idea of how complicated the language of this document actually is. Anyway, that's just as an aside. It's an agreement between the US and the Taliban. Now, that's really actually remarkable because, of course, this is supposed to be, at some level, a civil war. It's supposed to be a civil war between the Taliban and the internationally recognized Afghan government in Kabul. Now, of course, the Taliban has never recognized that government and refuses to negotiate with that government. And the government, in turn, refuses to negotiate with the Taliban. But what you have instead, and perhaps this is perhaps closer to the reality, is that alongside that war, there is a war between the United States and the Taliban. And what has happened is that Donald Trump and the White House and the US government have basically cut out the Afghan government and have gone directly to the Taliban and have agreed this deal with them. So that means the Afghan government is cut out of the picture, but it is a party still in Afghanistan, and it could potentially start to make trouble. And I understand, by the way, and we come to this in a moment, that it already is. Anyway, what this agreement basically says is that there's going to be a ceasefire. There are going to be negotiations between the Taliban and this entity, or at least what the Afghanistan at the Taliban considers an entity, which is the Afghan government, to come to some sort of a negotiation. And in return, there will be a phased withdrawal of US troops from Afghanistan. And this is going to go on over a lengthy period. So there will be an immediate drawdown to about 6,000 troops from the numbers that there are at the moment. And then over a period of over a year, the remaining troops will go. And there's also to be, of course, the usual exchange of prisoners. But of course, there are lots of things that could go wrong. Firstly, there's supposed to be a ceasefire, but one of the parties to the fighting, which is the Afghan government, is not committed under this agreement to a ceasefire. That is one thing. And secondly, there's supposed to be an exchange of prisoners, but of course, most of the prisoners, the prisoners, you know, the Taliban people who have been taken prisoner, are actually held by the Afghan government, which may not be willing to release them. And I gather there's already been a statement from the Afghan government in which they say they're not prepared to release these people, or at least they don't feel any They're not bound to release these people. So there are lots of things that could go wrong. Having said that, it is a deal. It's a peace deal. We haven't seen a peace deal between the two most important parties in Afghanistan, that which is to say the Taliban and the US, since the outset of this war in 2001. What I interpret this deal as meaning is that the United States, Donald Trump, is intending to withdraw from Afghanistan, bring all the troops back, and that they are going to eventually do that, and that they are doing that in an ordered way by coming to some kind of arrangement with the Taliban itself. So what happens after the US is gone? That's another matter again.
Okay, so I'm thinking about this deal in the context of the Trump's history of negotiating groundbreaking deals, historic deals. And I come away with this, Alexander. Trump's intentions are very good. It seems to me they're very good. And I look at North Korea. I mean, that was historic when he crossed over. Absolutely historic. You could feel that there was an intention to search for a peaceful solution. And then I think of Syria and how many times Trump has announced that he is withdrawing from Syria. And every time he tries to move troops out, you know, some neocon gets in the way, some Bolton or Bolton-esque figure comes in the way and ruins it, or the mainstream media gets in the way. So with North Korea, he couldn't get over the finish line.
No.
Once again, Bolton, you know, got in the way, that's for sure. And then you have Syria. He couldn't get it over the finish line. You still have troops there. North Korea is unresolved. Syria is unresolved. Is this where you would place the deal with the Taliban? How would you place this? Do you think it has a good chance of heading the way of those two previous deals? Or do you think perhaps this one has a better path towards getting over the finish line and actually getting all the troops out, 100% gone back home?
I think your comments are extremely astute. I think that you're absolutely right. I think both with respect to Syria and with respect to North Korea, Donald Trump had genuine intentions to move forward, and he was defeated by the bureaucracy in Washington. I think there is a major difference with this particular deal, and this is that he's actually got it in writing. He's actually managed to hammer out an actual written deal with the Taliban. Now, it's very complicated. Lots of things could go wrong. There's ample opportunities for people in Washington and in Kabul. You know, there are people in Kabul who are against this deal, and they could easily team up with the hardliners in Washington to try to wreck it. So it's possible. But having said that, getting a deal, a written deal at all, which commits the United States to a withdrawal, is something that Donald Trump never managed to get an analogous deal, either over Syria, say with the Russians, or with North Korea, with Kim Jong-un. So this is a major difference. And I'm going to make a further point, and it draws directly from the point you said. What has made this deal possible? What has it made it possible for Donald Trump to fix this deal, to complete it in the way that you've just said, is that John Bolton was sacked and the impeachment failed. That's left him in a much stronger position to make deals of this kind than he was 3 or 4 or 5 months ago. So that's the fundamental change that has happened. And I think he's always wanted to get the troops out of Afghanistan. I think he basically wants to get the troops out of Syria. I think, just as you said, he wants to deal with North Korea. He's done it over Afghanistan. It's lots of things could go wrong. But, you know, let's hope he sees it through. He's able to get it done this time. And let's hope that building on that, he'll be able to return to the crisis in North Korea and the crisis in Syria and come to comparable deals there in his second term, assuming he's re-elected. But, you know, you're quite right. There will be people in the Washington bureaucracy who will oppose this. One further thing I would say is that I don't think that the deep state in Washington is quite as emotionally invested in Afghanistan as they are in North, you know, with the North Korean crisis or with Syria. I mean, they're obsessed still, I think, with achieving regime change in Syria. They're obsessed still with forcing the total disarmament of North Korea. I think that with Afghanistan, it takes a very hard line, very extreme, very fanatical person to see this war in Afghanistan as anything other than a liability for the United States.
Yeah, it's been going on forever, it seems.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and I also think that there is a very fanatical portion of the swamp that doesn't want to pull out of Afghanistan.
Absolutely.
There's obviously there's a lot of people in Afghanistan that don't want this either, because there's a lot of money in play. There's a lot of money and there's a lot of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to get too conspiracy theory as we do this video, but you could go all the way back to the Clintons and the fact that there was a lot of drugs moving from Afghanistan into Kosovo and from Kosovo to the United States. And there's a lot of people that theorize that Bill Clinton was behind the whole operation. So I also think there may be an element of Trump kind of sticking it to this fanatical group here. And I say that because, do you think Trump learned something from Syria and from North Korea as he was hammering out this deal? Because it was done very quietly. There wasn't a lot of press. It kind of came out of left field almost. I mean,
it did.
You know, no one was really talking about Afghanistan. Mm. There was no tweets. Mm. It was very quiet. And then all of a sudden, bam, you have a deal with the Taliban. There was some news, you know, about a month ago that, yes, we'd be open to talking to the Taliban. Yes, we're negotiating with them. The Taliban, you know, we'll sit down with them. And there were some talks. But all of a sudden, you had a deal. It seems to me that Trump is learning something here as he's going along as president of the United States, because he kind of really stuck it to the swamp here. And he did it in a very quick, you know, bam, like a very fast fashion, almost like a knockout blow with this deal. So they don't have much time to react.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think that's entirely true. If he'd, I mean, what Trump used to do is that he would announce his intention to do something that would give the swamp, the deep state, the blob, call it what you will, time to mobilize, time to organize angry headlines and articles in the media, time to get, you know, various senators and all those people coming out on television, you know, on MSNBC and CNN and talking about, you know, appeasement and Munich and betrayal and, you know, doing Putin's bidding and all that kind of nonsense. And then, faced with all of that, Donald Trump would have to retreat. And we've seen that time and again. This didn't happen this time. And in fact, on the contrary, as you rightly said, he kept very quiet. This whole negotiation, very uncharacteristically of every administration, by the way, that I can think of, was conducted in almost complete secrecy. We had Khalilzad, the US representative, meeting in Doha with the Taliban. We'd known these negotiations were going on. The rumors were that for a long time that they were at an impasse. And in reality, suddenly out of nowhere, this deal is sprung. So that really was a surprise. So, you know, he's learned that. I think he also learned back in the summer that he wasn't going to get anywhere unless he got rid of people like John Bolton, who are in the National Security Council. So he sacked John Bolton. We know that he's in the process of sacking lots of people in the National Security Council. He's apparently appointed someone to go around sacking people from all parts of the US government who've been disloyal. And this has created some anger. And I think it's entirely necessary, by the way. So, you know, he's finally getting his act in order in that respect. And can I just make a point? The timing of this for him could not be better. He promised his base in 2016 that he would end the endless wars. And, you know, he's now got a deal for the first time to do that, just that, with the war that's gone on the longest and which has cost the most money. I mean, the amount of money the United States has spent on on Afghanistan is literally, I believe it runs into the trillions. I mean, that's unbelievable, but it's true. I mean, I remember years ago, years and years ago, comparing how much money the Soviets spent on their war in Afghanistan, which only lasted half the time, and comparing that with what the US has spent. There's minuscule drop. I mean, I think they spent in about the amount they spent the amount in Afghanistan over 9 years that the US spends in a period of something like 2 weeks. I mean, it costs absolutely phenomenal sums of money. Quite a lot of American troops, by the way, have been, either killed or injured. Not as many as Russians. But then, of course, the Russians had to fight against a war in Afghanistan where the other side was being equipped by, a rival superpower, which is the United States. It's been a, the US has never had faced that, and yet it's struggled in Afghanistan. The war has been unpopular, and the objective is unclear because Al-Qaeda has been driven out of Afghanistan. It's become very clear that the Taliban have no time for for Al-Qaeda anyway. They consider them extremely, dubious people, and they've always made clear that their interests go no further than Afghanistan itself. The Taliban leader who supported the Taliban, sorry, who supported Al-Qaeda, Mullah Omar, is dead. So, this war has no realistic objective. I don't expect Al-Qaeda going back to Afghanistan. The Taliban are already fighting ISIS in Afghanistan. And I think that this deal, if it works, what we'll actually do is set the scene for peace. So, it's a it, we get criticized a lot on these by some of our viewers for being pro-Trump, but again, I can't see this as anything other than a big win for him.
Yeah, I think it's a big win for the world. Do you think this is going to
Yeah.
be a well-received plan in the international community?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, I think the Russians, the Chinese, the Pakistanis, the Iranians, all of those people will be very happy to see the US,
Europe?
Europe, all of those people. They will all be pleased to see the US withdrawing from Afghanistan. And it isn't just that it's more peaceful, but of course, you mentioned the drugs trade. Of course, Afghanistan is the major center of heroin production. What isn't widely known is that the Taliban, when they were in power in Afghanistan in the 90s, actually cracked down very successfully and effectively on the opium and heroin trade. And then exploded after they were overthrown and, over the course of this very violent war. The hope must be that, with a strong government in Kabul, again, which is in full control of the entire country, something can again be done to bring this terrible trade, this terrible heroin trade, under control, because it devastates lives. And by the way, what you said is not entirely it's not conspiracy theory at all, and it goes further back than you said. I remember I was I was working in London in the early 1980s, and I remember how at the time there was that war going on between Russians and the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, who we were supporting, the West was supporting, and many of whom are, drugs were into the drugs trade. That those people use the war and use the support of the US at that time to increase their supply of drugs. And I remember how suddenly London was being flooded with heroin in ways that had never happened before. And it got completely out of control. And of course, nobody could talk about it, but it was clear where it was all coming from, and it was clear who was behind it, and nobody was able to say it because, of course, that would undermine the war effort against the Russians. And again, in the 1990s, there was the same things were going on in the early 1990s before the Taliban gained control. You know, drugs, the heroin trafficking from Afghanistan exploded. And again, it's, you know, fairly well known that there were all sorts of people from, you know, important people in various governments, in various countries, who were turning a blind eye to it because it served their geopolitical and personal financial interests. So let's not talk about this as a conspiracy theory. There are actually fairly well documented information about the role of all sorts of people in the heroin trade. And, you know, hopefully if a strong government in Afghanistan establishes itself, they'll keep Al-Qaeda out and they'll end the drugs trade, as did briefly happen in the 1990s.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they say that Bill Clinton, one of the main reasons that he destroyed Yugoslavia and Serbia and broke off Kosovo was because that area acted as the transit point of the drugs from Afghanistan into Europe. And then the drugs would funnel throughout Europe. Like you said, they'd make their way into the UK, but then they would also transit them out of the heart of Europe into the United States. So they said that, you know, that was one of the main reasons that Serbia played such a key role for the Clinton administration to destroy it, because it would act as a central hub, a transit point for those drugs out of Afghanistan.
I've not heard about
that. That may be a separate video in and of itself.
I should stress, I don't know about Clinton's role in all of that. What I do know is that Kosovo, which is this pretty independent country, so-called, which is a protectorate essentially, is now a major transit hub for Afghan heroin, which has been, you know, traveling through Europe. I mean, that I know for an absolute fact. What the motivations were of various people in 1999 when there was the war, I don't know. But in terms of involvement by various governmental agencies, not just of the United States, but of many countries, Turkey, France at one time, by the way, in the international drugs trade, of that there is no question at all. I mean, you only have to look at the literature on this, which is enormous, and including the academic literature, and it is indisputable.
Yeah. All right. Alexander Merkurs, Editor-in-Chief of The Durand, thank you very much. Guys, click on that subscribe, smash that like, check that subscribe button, because YouTube unsubscribes people all the time, and they unsubscribe you without your permission. So check your subscription to our channel so you can get notified when we push out new videos. PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar, your donation really helps us out a whole lot. And when you go to the Durand shop and pick up some merchandise, that also helps us out a whole lot. Alexander is wearing a Durand polo. I'm wearing a Durand shirt. And I know you've got a magic mug there somewhere.
Indeed, I do. I have the one with the coat of arms of Moscow, which shows you there. You can see him, St. George. Slaying the dragon of fake news and untruth, which is what we try to do on our programs. I should say this particular magic mug is my wife's favorite, so I don't always have it because she's usually drinking things out of it. Now, I'm going to say something else, by the way. I discovered something absolutely amazing about our magic mugs, which I was completely unaware of until recently, and which shows how amazing they are and how magical they are, because, of course, they are wonderful mugs. They hold lots of tea and coffee or beer, if you like, or even champagne, as I once tried. And they're beautifully made, and they're amazing porcelain, and they don't chip or break. And they're the best mugs I've ever had. And I've said that always and many times. But I just discovered just the other day when I, you know, left some coffee in my magic mug, and I decided to heat it up in the microwave. So I put my mug in the microwave, which, you know, you shouldn't do, by the way. It's a horrible way of reheating coffee. You shouldn't reheat your coffee anyway. But anyway, I did that. And to my astonishment, when I sort of went in to take it out, I found that the mug itself was hot with the coffee inside it, but the handle was not. It was absolutely, you know, firm and easy to handle. So, you know, it shows you how magical these mugs are. You can even put them in the microwave and bring them out, and they're absolutely perfect. But having said that, don't do it. Not because it does any harm to the mug, but but because it's terrible for your coffee and tea. It tastes frankly disgusting if you ever do that. But I was in a hurry and I needed my caffeine shot. So anyway, you see how amazing our magic mugs are. And as Alex correctly said, our polo shirts are fantastic too. 100% cotton, beautifully made, extremely comfortable, perfect for nice bright days like the kind we're having today in London, but also cold, wet days, and also for all other kinds of weather. I was wearing mine on the Alps when it was snowy there. So it's perfect in all seasons, all places, and all seasons, and you can certainly wear it as I have done in the most stylish and elegant locations. So these are amazing polo shirts, and we don't just have polo shirts; we also have t-shirts, long sleeved and short sleeved, of the same phenomenal quality, and they're incredibly hard wearing. I mean, I've had my shirts now for over a year; I wear them all the time, and none of them—it's quite amazing, actually. They're all as good as new as our mugs are. So it shows you how good these shirts are. We also have V-neck shirts, we have hats, hoodies, and stickers. We have some extremely informative electronic books, which you can also find on our shop, on Brexit, in about Russiagate, Ukrainegate, and about Epstein. We're thinking of doing some more of those, by the way. So you can go to our shop, find all of these things. As Alex says, you can support us that way, because when he says that we're finding ourselves our videos demonetized all the time, he's telling the absolute truth. And I've had many people come up to me and complain about how they've been unsubscribed. I had one person at a big event in London telling me he'd been done to him 3 times. So you can support us, not just by subscribing and resubscribing, but by coming to our shop and buying these great things. So what's holding you back? Come to our shop, buy these great things, support the Duran. Alex will tell you how.
Just go to theduranshop.com. You'll find the link in the description box down below. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.